Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict is one of the longest enduring in international relations. At its core, it's a conflict fueled by two differing efforts towards self-determination: Israel's Zionism and Palestinian nationalism. But it's a conflict that is incredibly more complex and requires nuanced negotiation. The struggle, which has seen both a long-term peace process and ongoing violence, has also proved difficult for world leaders, particularly in the United States. The Churches for Middle East Peace, a coalition of 27 national church denominations and organizations working to encourage U.S. policies that actively promote just, lasting, and comprehensive resolutions to conflicts in the Middle East, will host three panel discussions in central Wisconsin from April 1st through the 3rd. Their hope is to give a rounded view of all who are seeking a peaceful solution to the Middle East conflict. I'm Shereen Seward. Joining me today is Allison Glick, Director of Development and Mobilization of Churches for Middle East Peace. Allison is one of several speakers who will participate in those upcoming panel discussions we've been talking about. Allison, welcome to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you very much, Shereen. I'm very delighted to be here.
Thank you. Also joining me in the studio, Claudette Herring. She is a Wausau resident who has traveled to the Middle East with a peace advocacy group. She's been working to bring awareness of the conflict to the people of central Wisconsin. Claudette, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you, Shereen. Glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, we'd also like to hear from our listeners. Our number is 800-780-9742. So what would you like to know about the peace process in the Middle East? 800-780-9742 is the number to call. So, Allison, let's start with you. Can you explain to us what is Churches for Middle East Peace and what is your role there?
Thank you. As you mentioned, Churches for Middle East Peace, or CMEP, is a nonprofit organization that's based in Washington, D.C., that works to encourage U.S. policies that actively promote a comprehensive resolution to conflicts in the Middle East, with a particular focus on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We work mainly, as you mentioned, in the U.S. Christian community, and our 27-member policy board, we've actually just grown to 28 members, is made up of Catholic, Orthodox, mainline Protestant, and evangelical and peace churches. So it's a fairly representative coalition of the U.S. Christian community. And while we focus on the Christian community in the United States, often we do so working with other faith communities, with Jewish organizations, with Muslim organizations, as well as secular organizations who are also working to change U.S. policy and to support a just peace in Israel-Palestine.
Okay. Claudette, I know that you've spent some time in the Middle East. We've talked about this quite a bit, and I know you took a tour throughout the region. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this was, I guess I'm going to just kind of preface that with a little bit of backdrop for myself, because for the last, it's been over a decade, through the Synod, the East Central Synod of Wisconsin, I had been working on global mission efforts for probably over a decade. And in the ELCA, this effort is called Peace Not Walls. So I felt that I was informed, but clearly, I had always been intrigued about going over and learning more. So a friend and I, Carolyn Mahalski, traveled to Israel, Palestine, and Jordan in 2017. And coming back from that, we just simply felt compelled that we needed to do something locally.
Okay. So did your travels change your perception about what was happening over there? How did it really inspire you?
As I have heard other travelers talk about experiences, and for me as well, when you know something prior to going, but when you're in place, you know, on the ground with the people, and you hear the voices of all of those who live there, then there is a new dimension that's added to your understanding.
Okay. All right. I know, too, that you've been working to further the conversation locally. You've hosted some events in some communities to help build awareness on the humanitarian issues that you learned about there. Tell us about some of those efforts, if you could, please.
Well, we shared, first of all, with our churches and a book club. And then we began exploring what Churches for Middle East was all about. And they were doing a presentation over in La Crosse. So we went over there to observe and learn from that. And then we began exploring with them, is it possible that they might be able to come to Wausau? At the same time, then, we were putting together a series of local community events. One, a panel discussion, 5 members from the area. Another was a film viewing and discussion, and then we had a book discussion as well.
Okay, and I know that the Pilgrimage to Peace panel on Israel and Palestine for the greater Wausau area is coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but April 1st, April 2nd, and April 3rd, there are events in Wausau and in Merrill. Allison, Churches for Middle East Peace uses 3 primary strategies. I saw this on your website. The strategies that you use to encourage U.S. policies that promote a just peace. You say that you educate, you elevate, and you advocate. Can you expand on that a little bit? What does that mean?
Sure. Educate, elevate, advocate means that we work to educate the Christian community about the realities on the ground in the Holy Land and the broader Middle East, although most of our work focuses on Israel-Palestine, and that's done through speaking tours like the Pilgrimage to Peace tour, which will be in Wausau next week, as well as other speaking events. We take groups to Israel-Palestine for multi-narrative tours, again, so that individuals can see the reality on the ground themselves. We also, in the past year, have rolled out a 5-part curriculum on the search for peace and justice in the Holy Land. And as part of this educational effort, we seek to elevate the voices of those working on the ground for a just peace. Voices like Obada Shteya and Suzanne Muldner, who will be with us in Wausau next week. Our upcoming fall tour will feature Rabbi Daniel Roth, who's an Israeli scholar and peace advocate, and Aziz Abu Sada, who's a Palestinian advocate and author from Jerusalem. And of course, the purpose of all of this educational effort is to allow U.S. citizens to be enabled to become informed advocates with their congressional representatives to move U.S. foreign policy toward a more holistic perspective that actually promotes justice and peace.
All right. Thank you. You were saying, too, that your organization's work is different from other peace groups working on this issue. How so?
There are a large number of peace groups, both religiously identified as well as secular, doing great work in the U.S. on this issue. And the way that CMEP differs is that we're an ecumenical organization founded about 35 years ago by a number of different U.S.-based denominations and communions in order to work more efficiently and effectively together. So we're a coalition that works by consensus in determining policy positions, but on an ecumenical basis. I think that would be the main difference. But we do work with a number of other peace groups in the United States.
Okay. Claudette, I've got a question for you. I know that this issue of Middle East peace can be a rather contentious one. There are strong opinions on all sides of this issue. It is an issue that we hear about frequently in the news. So when you participate in these local events in your outreach, I know that you like to focus on the humanitarian aspect of it, not the politics. But when you participate, what are some of the maybe misconceptions, maybe the gaps in understanding? What are you finding when you're working with people in the community? What don't they know that you wish that they would know?
that's a big question.
Yes, I know.
I think probably one of the thoughts that both Carolyn and I came back with was that basically the media across our country is presenting fairly skewed information. So we hear it, and we've heard it for a long time, a kind of a certain variety of information. And I think one of the things that we clearly want to do is to, as we just heard, to enhance the information, to just present information that is, I think, clear from all voices on the ground, so to speak, so that we aren't hearing a single voice or an angry voice, but voices that need to be talking together, listening very carefully to one another, and appreciating also the differences that are inherent in them, in and among them. It's not unlike living in any community. You know, this is a worldwide community that we live in, but it's local as well. So, you know, what we need to learn is to, no matter what the topic, but this is clearly one of them, is to be listening carefully to the other, so that we can gain some new understanding and appreciation for the viewpoint that someone else might have. It's respect, just respecting another person's point of view, or I guess point of view is probably the best way to talk about that. And point of view and an understanding, because the culture runs deep, and over there the cultures are many, and they are deep, and the history is deep. So it's complicated. It requires much more careful listening. So if anything, I think I've learned it's really to be a careful listener, no matter where we are.
Sure, sure. You and I were talking before the program a little bit about the conditions there, that when you went on your trip, you know, how different is it from what you expected, or did you see exactly what you expected?
Some things I expected, I saw. But again, it's the intensity, I guess I'll say, of the reality when you're there. So to see a picture of a wall is one thing. To walk the wall and to visually review the contents of what has been placed on the wall by the people who live there, and to take that in, that adds another much deeper dimension to the understanding of the people. And then to listen to the stories, the real stories of occurrences in people's lives. That made all the difference in the world. You can read about them, but when you sit with someone and hear the story directly from them, now it's for real.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Shereen Seward. Joining me today is Allison Glick, Director of Development and Mobilization of Churches for Middle East Peace. Allison is one of several speakers who will participate in some upcoming panel discussions. Allison, again, really appreciate you being with us, and Claudette Herring with us as well. When we return, we'll talk further about the search for peace in the Middle East and an upcoming series of panel discussions on the topic. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Claudette Herring and Allison Glick are with us discussing the Churches for Middle East Peace Tour. You can join as well at 800-780-9742. Thanks for being with us. We certainly appreciate it. Allison, I've got to say, you know, for decades, international law has held that territory seized in war must be returned. We just saw this week. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel asserted that this was no longer a given. So does this complicate the issue in your view? This kind of development, does this complicate what you're doing?
Well, I think that I would answer that question in two ways. The short answer is yes, but first I would just on a more, I guess, meta level, I would encourage your listeners to think about a world where might always meant right. Of course, we know that often those with the most powerful armies often determine what happens post-war, but are we really prepared as a citizenry and as a world to normalize the conquest of other lands by force? You know, what does that mean for those who are expected to fight in these wars? You know, the daughters and sons, perhaps, of many of your listeners. It's really those making the decisions to go to war who end up fighting them. So that's, you know, one way to kind of look at that statement and how it complicates things. But secondly, I mean, I would say that the statement by Benjamin Netanyahu isn't really actually anything new. Perhaps he framed it in a different way this week, but for years, his words and perhaps more importantly, his actions have made it clear that this is what he believes and that, you know, he's not perhaps in really interested in compromising for peace. So I think, you know, the complication is that any attempt to normalize the fact that might makes right is really problematic, not just for Israelis and Palestinians, but for all of us who are interested in peaceful resolutions to conflict.
Okay. All right. Claudette, I've got a question for you. When you saw firsthand the realities that the occupation of the Palestinian territories have on people living on all sides of the conflict, both the Israelis and the Palestinians, I mean, talk about what that was like. What is it like to live there?
That brings back, I guess, a memory of an evening that we spent listening to two men, one an Arab and one a Jew. And these two had something deeply in common. They had lost children in one of the conflicts. And in a certain set of circumstances, they had found each other. And in their initial conversations, they discovered, you know, that they had this deep, deep wound that they needed to heal. And they were finding that they were blood brothers in that effort. So now they have, for years, since that awful time, they are a duo. And they have made an effort to travel from school to school to school to school. And they are sharing their message of peace, that we can come together in the middle of terrible things and find love in one another. So it's these kind of efforts that are happening on the ground over there, and they're growing. Parents of bereaved children is one of those groups, but there are others as well. So you see hope, you know, in the middle of difficult circumstances, you see and you hear hope happening as well.
Well, okay. This week, Israel's military started striking Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip after a reported Palestinian rocket hit a house in central Israel earlier in the day. Now, this is just yet another chapter in the ongoing conflict. When you hear this type of news, someone who has been there, someone who has visited, what is your reaction when you think about the human impact involved?
That cuts deep because you know that life has probably been lost. If not life, they may have been maimed. Their home is no longer there. So are they now refugees? What will be their circumstance? So it not only affects one family, but it will affect all kinds of families surrounding them and in the area. What could happen to one could happen to another. So it's fear. It's fear that they must feel, and it's sadness that this is the kind of thing that exists in our world, and just a lot of empathy for the life that they must have to endure.
Allison, I'm going to ask you that same question. I know that you lived and worked for 6 years in the Middle East. You spent so much time there. And when you hear about these kinds of situations, when you hear about military strikes and rockets that are launching, where do your thoughts go?
Well, I would just, I suppose, echo Claudette's words. I mean, I think about the people whom I know there, both in Israel and in Gaza, you know, people whom I care deeply about, and what does it mean for their lives when, I mean, we hear, of course, that the shelters in Israel are open at times like this. Of course, there aren't shelters in Gaza when the missiles begin raining down. So there's complete vulnerability there. And, you know, I think about what it means to have, as a mother, for example, to have no protection for my child in those situations. It's heartrending, and it's saddening. But I hope that efforts for people to understand that pain can move people towards work that in the future will mean that no one's child has to be in that type of situation.
Sure. Allison, your organization's mantra really is that by working together, justice can prevail, that there is a possible route to peace. What is it going to take? I mean, what really is it going to take for peace to be a reality in the Middle East, in your view?
Sure. I think in the wording of that tagline that you just mentioned lies the answer to the question, actually. I think peace will be possible when there is a real focus on bringing justice, because I truly believe with all my heart, without justice, there will be no durable peace. That is why when we talk about peace, we really have to be careful to frame it in terms that ensures its longevity. When we talk about peace, I believe that we have to talk about security, equality, dignity, and freedom for all, things that I'm sure your listeners can identify with, because these aren't foreign concepts. These are things that we all want, regardless of your religion, of your race, your nationality, your ethnicity. That's what I believe it will take for there to be a real peace.
Thank you. Claudette, I keep thinking about your trip to the Middle East. Can we talk a little bit more about that? How long did you spend there? And how many people were in your group?
There were 30 in the group, and we were there for a little over two weeks.
Okay, and what areas did you tour? How did that work?
Well, we spent a lot of time in and around Jerusalem. Traveled up to Hebron and over into Jordan as well. So we traveled. It's actually a pretty small territory, so you can cover a lot of ground and see a lot of the typical biblical area of the region. So mm-hmm.
I think it's hard for us to imagine, those of us who have not been there, what it's like to visit there or to live there. You were talking about so many rules. There are so many don'ts. There are, you know, areas that the Israelis can't go. There are areas where Palestinians are not allowed to drive. Did that surprise you when you saw all of that?
I guess it surprises you in the sense that you just wish that those things weren't there. But yes, there is either fencing or kind of walled divisions, so that it does contain Palestinians to a certain area. And they're now configured in such a way so that the analogy has been drawn to Swiss cheese, because it's a lot of little sections, which means that it makes it difficult for them, for the Palestinians, then to move around because they have to go through all the checkpoints in order to get into another area that they would like to go to, be it for hospital, for work, or whatever it might be. So it's not easy. It's not easy to move at any time for the people living there. And I think that even the road system varies. There are roads traveled exclusively by Palestinians and other roads that are for Israelis. So the separation is clear, yeah.
Sure. I do want to remind our listeners that you can join the conversation if you have a question for Allison or Claudette. Certainly give us a call. The number is 800-780-9742. And that's 800-780-9742. Claudette, why do you think it's so important to bring this message here? Why do you think that it matters locally? Why should the people of central Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, hear about what's going on over there?
We are citizens of the United States, and our country plays a huge role in what happens worldwide and has happened and continues to happen on behalf of Israel. So I think we need to be informed as citizens. What is our country doing? What are the ways in which we are playing a role over there? Are those healthy toward working toward peace? Or is that something that should be improved upon? And so we have voices, and we can make our voices known with the people who represent us on Capitol Hill and be a voice on behalf of the people over there who need, who need security, who need justice, who need equality, freedom, yeah.
And humanitarian help. Mm-hmm. And actually, that brings up a question for Allison. We've heard a lot of critics who say that, the U.S. can't want peace more than the parties themselves. People say there's no reason why the U.S. has to lead peace efforts or why Israeli-Palestinian issues should even be a priority for Americans or any American president. What's your response to that, Allison?
I think that it's fair to question the role of the United States in leading peace efforts, actually. But at the same time, it's not helpful or I think really acceptable for our government to then funnel the amount of aid that it funnels to the Israeli military, over $3 billion a year, if we're going to say that this is not going to be a priority for us. It's one thing to say that, but it's another thing, I think, to say that and then to give that vast amount of aid. I mean, what if even a fraction of that $3 billion a year were used not only to promote, say, restorative justice initiatives in Israel-Palestine, let alone what such money could do and be used for in our own communities in the here in the United States. And, you know, I would also just add to something that you asked Claudette earlier, because it also answers the earlier question in terms of, you know, how CMEP differs from other peace groups. CMEP allows not only heads of communion denominational leaders to engage on this issue. It allows church partners, because we have also over 100 churches who engage with us as individual churches. And then as individual regional coordinators like Claudette, who are able to, regardless of whether or not your church is represented officially in CMEP, you are able to engage with us on the trips that Claudette mentioned, with the curriculum that we have developed, on any other an array of different levels that allows you to educate yourself and your communities, and then to engage with your congressional representatives on this issue. And I think the power of Claudette's description of what she saw really is a testament to what you see you cannot unsee, and it really changes your perspective on this issue, and in fact many others, I believe.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about what Churches for Middle East Peace have you done to advocate? I mean, what are some of the things that you do?
Sure. Well, first of all, we have three advocacy priorities, which is holistic peace building, humanitarian and economic aid, and human rights. And we do, in addition to these educational efforts that I've mentioned already, we have advocacy summits where we bring people to Washington, D.C., talk about specific issues related to those three advocacy priorities, and then help them to make appointments with their congressional representatives to talk about the issues and to talk about how we as U.S. citizens would like our representatives to move U.S. policy in a way that reflects a more just outcome. We focused recently, for example, on the cut of U.S. aid to UNRWA, to the U.N. Refugee and Works Agency that supports Palestinian refugees, and the cut of USAID funding to the Palestinian territories. In the past, we've supported a bill by Representative Betty McCollum in Minnesota in a part of a campaign that was actually sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee and Defense of Children International, a bill that would basically disallow U.S. aid to be used in the funding of the detention of Palestinian children in Israeli military prisons. Quite often, hundreds of Palestinian children have been arrested by the Israeli military and held in detention centers and have been mistreated. And so this bill, which we expect Representative McCollum to reintroduce into the new Congress, basically says U.S. Aid and U.S. taxpayer dollars should not be used in those types of human rights violations. So those are just a few examples of the work that we've done.
Okay, thank you. Allison Glick and Claudette Herring, our guests today on Route 51. When we return, we'll talk further about the search for peace in the Middle East and an upcoming series of panel discussions on the topic. You can join the conversation as well at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Claudette Herring and Allison Glick are with us discussing the Churches for Middle East Peace Tour. You can join the conversation as well by calling 800-780-9742, and we welcome your calls. Again, thanks for joining us today. Allison, I've got to ask you, what are some of the biggest obstacles to the peace process that really exist today?
Oh, wow. This is often mentioned, but I think it's always worth mentioning. I think that the continuation of settlement building in the West Bank and the confiscation of land and resources is really problematic. I think that this is part of what undermined and really caused the failure of the Oslo peace process is that even after the accords were signed, there was a continuation of settlement building. One thing that's often not talked about in the U.S. media is the siege of Gaza, which has been in effect since 2006. And what that means is that the Gaza Strip is really kind of sealed, both land, sea, and air. And so Gazans are essentially imprisoned in this strip of land in which they live. And what gets in and out in terms of, you know, food, products, resources is really controlled by the Israeli authorities. And as a result of the military incursions that have happened the last several years, the UN has determined that by 2020, Gaza will actually be unlivable because of the lack of fresh water, because of the lack of infrastructure, et cetera. And then, unfortunately, I think that actions that our own administration has taken recently in terms of moving the embassy, our embassy to Jerusalem, and closing the consulate there that served Palestinians in East Jerusalem, and recently, very recently, signaling that it's going to recognize the annexation of the Golan Heights. I think it's been made very clear that we're not, unfortunately, an honest broker. So that's going to be problematic, I think, in terms of trying to move things forward from the U.S. perspective.
Thank you. We do have a caller. Krista is calling from Wausau, and she has a question about the current administration and this issue. Krista, can you hear us?
Yes.
Thank you for calling, Krista. What was your question?
Well, I'm concerned about exactly what is being talked about right now, that our actions in the U.S. and also the public perception in the U.S. of Palestine being bad and Israel being good seems to be pretty predominant, I think, among a lot of people. You know, they think Palestine's probably just full of a bunch of Muslims and all Muslims are bad, and that bothers me. And then I also think that, or I wonder how the building or the obsession with building a wall on the southern border of Mexico and how that parallels with what Israel is.
Oh, I'm sorry. We lost Krista on the call, but we have Allison back. Hopefully you were able to hear some of that. Krista had some questions about the current administration and the impact that has had on the current situation. Allison, what are your thoughts on that?
I only just heard the last few words of Krista, unfortunately.
Okay.
I think she was talking about the wall on our southern border. But in terms of the impact of our administration, I mean, on the one hand, President Trump is, to a certain extent, actually taken steps and made very explicit in public what other past administrations have done a little bit more quietly. But the impact of saying essentially it with actions that we only are going to represent and see one side of this conflict.
Okay.
So I think it sends a message to the Palestinians and to the world that we're going to give carte blanche to one side, and that's the way it's going to be. So, you know, what really is there to negotiate in
right.
those circumstances?
Right. And thank you. And Krista, I apologize for the technical problem there. I would like to talk about the panel discussions that are coming up this week. I think the Pilgrimage to Peace, the panel on Israel and Palestine in the greater Wausau area, this is going to provide some interesting information for people in our area who want to learn more. Claudette, tell us a little bit about the Pilgrimage to Peace. What is this going to offer audiences?
Well, it will offer the audience a chance to hear firsthand information from people who are working with refugees and from those who are doing some work in educational kind of format, helping develop individuals who are interested in doing advocacy work. So, you know, we'll hear from them. But I think the upshot of all of that will be that it will be affirming to us as well, letting us know that one, we've got new information that we can speak about and share with others. So it's that rather than hearing one-sided information, we will hear something new and something broader to help us just develop our own ability to be more vocal and to do the advocacy work that is important.
Okay. So the events, there's one at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Wausau, there's one at YWCA in Wausau, and one at Holy Cross Clare Center in Merrill. And of course, Allison, you are one of the speakers, yes?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So who else will be joining you?
We'll be joined by Obanda Shikea of the One Voice Movement, which is an organization that works at the grassroots level in Israel-Palestine to bring about a just peace. And Suzanne Moldner of an organization called Beirut and Beyond, which works in the Palestinian refugee community in Beirut and beyond. So we're thrilled to have both Obada and Suzanne with us on this tour.
Okay. All right. And, you know, what discussions are you going to be having during these panel presentations? I know that the realities affecting the Palestinian refugee community, that's going to be part of the discussion. What else can attendees expect to hear?
The three of us are going to be talking about our own journeys to be advocates for justice in the Holy Land. I'll talk a bit about the 6 years that I spent living in Israel-Palestine in the camp outside of Damascus. And Obada and Suzanne will talk about what brought them to be, focusing their lives on working on this issue. And the hope is that we will give the audience not only information, as Claudette said, about what's happening on the ground in reality, but also an understanding that we all have our own journey to be peacemakers and advocates for justice. And, you know, whether it's on this issue, which of course is very meaningful to all of us personally, but like perhaps Krista, I unfortunately didn't hear all of her question, but she talked about the wall being built on our southern border. You know, many, many citizens in this country are very much involved in the plight of refugees and those hoping for a better life in this country. So we hope to inspire people to work for justice in their communities on whatever issue moves them. And I mean, ultimately, I think the message that we want to send is that the voices of U.S. citizens can and do make a difference for the future of the Holy Land, and that there are Israelis and Palestinians who are working very hard to change the trajectory that they're on, and that we're all on, frankly, and honestly, together, and that trajectory can be one that has a just vision, and that these people need and deserve our support.
I think it's in reading about Churches for Middle East Peace, I found it interesting that there was more of an emphasis on peace for all people in the region, the Palestinians, the Israelis, everyone who's living in that region. I mean, is that really your focus, that you're really looking at the humanitarian side of things here?
Absolutely. That's why humanitarian aid and is one of our three advocacy focuses. We very firmly believe that, as I mentioned earlier, justice, equality, dignity for all is what all people want and what all people deserve, I believe. So it's really, and that's why our Pilgrimage to Peace tours include voices of people working on the ground in Israel and in the Palestinian territories. Because it's important, as our tagline says, to elevate those voices, because it's only in building peace holistically that peace is really going to be achieved.
Claudette, when you went to work to organize this Pilgrimage to Peace, the events in our area, what was the response from the churches?
Well, that's yet to be discovered, maybe.
Okay.
Because we have shared the information about these events with all of them. And so we'll put them to the test and see how many of them actually shared it with their members. But we don't know that. There are certain of us in the area whose denominations have already been at work on this issue. So those denominations in particular are informed internally already. So we're hoping that, you know, this just brings a bigger audience now that we can continue work with mm-hmm. within our community.
Okay. And the events, where, when?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The first one, April 1st at Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 6:30. That's a Monday. On Tuesday the 2nd, we haven't talked about this, but the panelists will be down at Stevens Point on the UW campus presenting to history students there. But in the evening at 6:30, then it will be at the YWCA here in Wausau. And then on Wednesday, they will be working with East High School students in the morning and early afternoon. And then in the evening, again at 6:30, up at Holy Cross Sisters Clare Center in Merrill.
Okay.
I do want to sneak one other piece of information in here, Fanny.
Sure.
And that is that the Bright Stars of Bethlehem art exhibit will be here in Wausau at the Center for the Visual Arts from April 18th through the 30th. And this is student photography that has been produced by students at the Dar Al-Kalima University College of Arts and Culture. So those pieces will give us, again, the on-the-ground look at life in the Holy Land.
Sure. So you'll be working with some students as well,
then. We won't be working with the students, but their works will be on exhibit.
Okay. But you have something going at Wausau East and at...
Yes, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Allison, you know, I know that Israel's elections are coming up the 9th of April, very quickly. What do you expect is going to happen, and how do you think that election might impact the future peace process?
Well, unfortunately, I don't expect that the next Israeli government, not that I pretend to know what it will look like, I try not to be in that sort of prediction business, but I don't see any signs on the horizon in terms of the political level there that the next Israeli government will be one that's going to be terribly focused on achieving a just peace. So unfortunately, I don't see many signs of hope there, but I think that this is all the more reason that we here in the United States must redouble our efforts as U.S. citizens who care about both the future of Israelis and Palestinians and the future of the Holy Land to work for a future based on justice, equality, and dignity for all. And if I may just add something that relates to my own experience of living in Israel, Palestine. And it relates to a question that you asked earlier about the impact of the wall. I think, you know, one of the really unfortunate impacts on a humanitarian and personal level is that because of the wall and because of the separation of Israelis and Palestinians, when I lived there back in the mid to late 80s, Israelis, and I saw this happen all the time, you know, Israeli journalists, intellectuals, writers, peace activists could come to Gaza when I lived there, and so that there would be ways for Israelis and Palestinians to interact in a way that wasn't just, you know, running from bombs or bullets. With the institution of the wall, that possibility has literally been sealed off so that the only interaction between, for the most part, between the two peoples is one that is, you know, based on a violence and aggression. And I think, not that I think that, honestly, the problem can be solved by people interacting
personally, but I think the fact that the only way to know the other is through the spectrum of being an enemy is really something that is unfortunate.
All right.
I hope will change.
Thank you so much. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I am Shireen Siewert, and I'd like to thank our guests, Claudette Herring and Allison Glick. Our executive producer today is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route51. Next week, we discuss the way art is helping veterans deal with the crippling effects of PTSD. Until then, we're headed out of town.